Sunday.
It's Sunday morning.
I love mornings.
The games are over, and we're breaking it all down. This is your Morning After podcast with all the insight and analysis on the Utes, Cougars, and Aggies. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bank. The Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole begins right now.
And you gave us an opportunity to come in here and show what we're made of.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
After podcast, Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole. Oh boy, it was a rough one yesterday. Well, for Utah BYU, Utah State gets the win. We'll talk about the Aggies coming up here in just a bit. But Lloyd, while we wait for Hans, let's talk some University of Utah. Tough one for the Utes. You had the pre and post game show yesterday. 35-28. Utes offense was cruising early, and then Washington's defense came up big. You know, look, I had a bunch of obligations traveling, so I didn't have a chance. I'll take a deep dive on this thing for sure before the show coming up tomorrow. But you had the pre and post. You and Christian Cox kind of walked me through how this thing got sideways for the Utes.
Yeah, now, you know, it was a tale of two halves where, you know, in that first half, Bryson Barnes and that Ute offense came out firing. I mean, barely even tried to run the ball. It was all passes. I mean, he was outclassing Michael Penix Jr. He was 13 of 17, I think it was. And, you know, for nearly, nearly 300 yards passing through the air in just the first half. So he came out dealing, and it's almost like that Ute offense didn't come out at the half after halftime. They weren't able to get anything going for the most part. And when they did get something going, to be honest with you, there were some questionable penalties. I mean, there was an offensive pass interference call by on Miki Sugituraga that was, if you go back and watch that, you will lose your mind. And I know Utah fans are losing their mind. There was some bad calls, but Utah's defense, they came out in that second half, and they got two stops out of the gates. I mean, they only allowed 11 points in that second half, which is, that's the defense doing their job. But they could not get anything going. The offensive line, I'd say they got owned in that second half. The offensive line got pushed around, and you really saw that when, I mean, it was such a weird, weird game. I mean, you had a Kalen Clay moment where.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, and I know you saw this. Yeah, a pick six, a tipped ball that's intercepted, and the guy is gone. Nobody's catching him, and he drops it almost 3 yards out of the end zone. And he's got teammates following behind him, which you would think was, I'm like, everybody in the studio is like screaming, pick it up, because it was so obvious and so blatant that he had dropped it way well before he got in the end zone. And, well, Michael Mokofisi, hustling, of all people, makes it down there and recovers it. So they get the ball on the 1 yard line. Well, very next play,
yeah,
you have the Washington defensive line gets some absolutely pushes the Utah's offensive line back into the end zone, and you get a safety. So, and that was probably, I mean, it might have been, I mean, Utah's offense wasn't getting much going anyways, but almost might have been better for them to just score the touchdown, because, you know, they get the ball back right away, and you, like I said, Utah's offense couldn't get anything going. I mean, and it was a sloppy, second half. You had, I think Utah's only had like three penalties in the first half. The second half, they had like nine total. Well, they finished with nine. Washington finished with 10, so they had some penalties as well, but none were as costly as some of Utah's. I mean, there was a defensive pass interference in the game where the ball was out of the end zone by, you know, by 15, 20 yards. Like, it wasn't even close. And so I think it was funny. Me and Krishna talked about it a little bit, but it was like, how many times have Pac-12 referees screwed over teams that were in the hunt for the playoffs? Like, whether it's USC or whatever, and then all of a sudden you're getting these bad calls that are going. It's almost like they don't want them to go to the playoff. Well, it felt like they wanted them to go, want Washington to be, you know, at least to get back to the Pac-12 title game. I'll say it was a really badly officiated game, but. At the same time, they need to make adjustments, and they needed to probably somehow find a way to maybe run the ball, do something different, because they were only down 7 points.
Yeah,
it's not like they were down 14, even though, you know, the way they were moving the ball, it felt like they were down
a lot. It's interesting too, because that Washington defense has been much maligned. There's moments where they look just downright awful, but. You go back to the USC game when they gave up 42 to USC, but they shut them out in the fourth quarter. And same thing, you know, against the University of Utah. Utes are mowing up and down the field in the first half. And then when they put the clamps down, Utah doesn't score again. And Utah had lots of opportunities. You know, the Barnes, we talk about the Kalen Clay fumble, but the Barnes pick before that was just, I mean, it was just bad. And Hans, I know you watched a good chunk of this game as well. Before your BYU commitments, it was, you know, look, that game was there for the taking. I think that's the rough part for the University of Utah. That game was there. I mean, it was there for the taking, and the Utes just couldn't take advantage of it.
They showed up and they were sure physical. That was a really nice thing about this game, is like how physical Utah was. It was, at least they showed up for a dogfight, but it was there. No question about it. And the two interceptions were really difficult. But there were so many things that I saw in that game that I liked. You know, right. Like you said, Utah just fighting their butts off, and still an opportunity to tie that thing up at the final possession if they could have got themselves down the field. What did you see in that final possession, Lloyd? It felt like there were some drop passes. It felt like there were some.
You had that overthrown. Management. Yeah, you had an overthrown. You had that overthrown ball right the very first one that was on first and 10. Overthrew him by 10 feet. Like, it was just a bad pass. Next one was a dropped pass. And then they hit a guy in the flat for zero yards. You need to try to get some yards. And it was so, it was such a slow developed play. Washington was able to snuff it out, and all of a sudden it was, before you knew it, it was fourth and 10 and everything's on the line. And that was really that was pretty much Utah's second half summarized. Just that drive alone, you have a chance to do it. You know, the pressure's on, and they couldn't get anything going. I mean, Bryson Barnes only had, like I said, I was talking before you hopped on, Hans, Bryson Barnes was like 13 of, I think it was like 13 of 17 or something like that, for almost 300 yards in that first half. Well, he only completed four passes in the second half. They were able to run the ball a little bit, but that wasn't really their game plan. Their game plan was in the air. Like, they saw a weakness in that first half, and they wanted to keep trying to go after that weakness. Well, they weren't able to get it done. It didn't happen.
Well, what I saw, what I came away from that game thinking, it wasn't that Utah's not a good team. What I came away thinking was, Odunze is an incredible receiver, yeah. And Penix is the best quarterback in the country. He is one of the best college passing quarterbacks I've ever watched.
And that's the thing, the defense got stops in the second half. They got stops. It was, the offense couldn't get anything going. But when Michael, I mean, they ended up having like one sack in the game, but they had pressure on him that threw him a little bit off. But all of a sudden, you know, you get a little pressure on him, but then Penix Jr. would make a pass and just throw an absolute dime. I mean, he hit Odunze. I mean, he hit him on a couple dimes. Like, it was
his
accuracy. You talk about that, and he throws that tight spiral that Michael Penix Jr. does. That just, I mean, they had problems with the wind in that game, but there was times where just, I mean, his ball just cuts through the wind. If you could see it, and it was just like, wow. I mean, the guy is a next level quarterback.
Hans, if you're an from what you've seen, we talk about college quarterbacks, and obviously you can be a great college quarterback and not be a particularly good NFL quarterback. But if you're an NFL GM, is Michael Penix making you have second thoughts on Caleb Williams?
Yeah. Yeah, he is. I am so impressed by his arm. It is one of the more and accurate and powerful and long levered arms that you're going to watch it really around. It's just accurate. It's such a quick release. There were three or four times where Utah had him dead to rights, and he would just flip the wrist. And that seam throw that he had, I think it might have been the second quarter, where Utah was on his back and he just flipped the wrist so fast, and it probably went 34, maybe 35 yards, somewhere in there, right on the money in the seam. And I was like, geez, this guy, how do you even beat this guy if he's got receivers?
He had good coverage.
Yeah, it was good coverage too. And you do have to have, you know, they've got this unique combination, whether it's Westover or I thought that Utah did a pretty good job of defending against Polk, but Odunze and Bernard, those receivers together are so difficult to try to defend. But I don't know. What about you? I mean, if I'm an NFL scout,
I'll be honest here. I haven't watched a lot of the North Carolina kid that everybody's slobbering over, the Drake May guy. I know that he's presumably the number two behind Caleb Williams, but everything I watched yesterday, Caleb Williams is going to bring a circus with him, and look, he's elite. He's got a great skill set, but I don't know, man. I want a guy who's really focused on winning and a guy who's just dedicated to his craft. And maybe Caleb Williams is that guy. And maybe I'm speaking out of turn and making broad brush judgments, but I don't know, man. Penix might be my guy. He might be my guy.
Well, Caleb Williams might be that guy from the awful Draft Day movie, by the way. He might be that guy that nobody goes to his birthday party.
He's Bo Callahan. Nobody's showing up to his birthday party.
He might be that guy that nobody shows up to his birthday party. Like, there's something that's just different about the guy. And I don't think it's in a good way, but you see he makes all these plays and you're like, wow, the guy is amazing, but he may be Bo Callahan.
Listen to these numbers though. This is crazy. Just how close they are. Caleb is at 67.9% completion. Michael is at 68. Caleb is at 3,249. Michael is at 3,533. Caleb has thrown 29 touchdowns. Michael's 28. Caleb has thrown 4 interceptions. Michael's 7. These guys are just neck and neck across the board, just numbers-wise. And numbers isn't going to be the determining factor, obviously. But it is interesting just how close they are. I just like Mike Penix. I like his throw a little better. His release. And I do like Caleb Williams' athleticism maybe a little bit better. But whose poise do you like better? Whose ego do you like better? Because
How much is he going to get away with in the next level with his athleticism, Hans?
Oh, he won't rely on it. But you know, you go back to early day Russell Wilson. It was just enough to manage, and if he manages it the right way, he can use it to keep people honest. He can use it to extend the pocket a little bit. It's not like he's going to jump on an NFL field and use use his athleticism to be Michael Vick. It's not going to be that, but you do like a guy that can maneuver around a little bit. But I also like a guy that is pocket ready. I like a guy that is pocket aware. And I feel like Michael might be a little bit more pocket aware. I also love a guy that can get a ball off as he's getting hit, because you have to have that in the NFL, because you're going to be getting hit oftentimes when you're trying to release, and you've got to be able to release accurately as you're taking a shot. Whose offensive line do you think is better?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think, honestly, I think Washington's probably got the better offensive line between the two. But, you know, ultimately, when you're looking at right now in the Pac-12, if you've got to go 80 yards in 4 minutes for a game-winning drive, I'm probably taking Penix over Caleb Williams right now, honestly.
Yeah, with the way his accuracy, and by the way, I mean, his pocket presence. Utah in that game, they got pressure on him, and they were able to get after him, but mm-hmm. his pocket presence was so good. And he was, I mean, as Hans mentioned earlier, he would quickly just flick it, and that ball was just, it was out. So, I mean, I'm with you on that. That would be a guy that I want, you know, leading on an 80-yard touchdown drive that's needed at the end of a game.
All right, let's shift gears. I know, BYU fans, you're grumpy, you're grouchy, you got some complaints, and frankly, you have plenty to complain about. Hans, you saw the game, you called the game, it was a rough one, man. And, you know, I watched a good chunk of the second quarter as we were getting on our plane coming back from Peoria, Illinois. Yeah, that was a fun trip. And it was bully ball. I mean, three straight games that BYU's just been bullied up front. And Iowa State did anything they wanted to on the offensive side, just punishing BYU in the trenches.
It's really rough, and it's going to just be tough with that coaching staff and how you figure out how you're going to move forward. That's three embarrassing losses in a row now, multiple 30-point-plus losses, and really it looks like there's dysfunction, and I don't know if guys don't want to listen or... You know, talking to Kalani in the post game, he's been frustrated. That's as frustrated as I've ever heard him, ever. Going back into our playing days, he's probably got a lot of questions himself. Like, how many times have I told these guys to hold contain? How much have we preach to these guys, do not let the outside free? And they did that. They did that a couple of times, one for a 59-yard run that Abu Sama broke. He's really good. And one for a 66-yard pass to Jalen Noel that got off on the outside. And
that one was brutal, by the way, Hans. That one was brutal because it wasn't even trying to go for a touchdown. Like, it was, that would have just gotten, should have just gotten a first down. That's it. It was out there where they could get a first down, and that guy was gone.
Well, they crack blocked on the man coverage. They locked up the receiver on the far side, and he got outside the numbers and was just gone. And guys, the safety play is really tough for BYU right now. It's as bad as it can possibly be. You know, they were trying to play a kid that's just back off his mission. And at the end of the half, he was unblocked, should have been able to stop that run for maybe a 1 yard gain. Instead, that run goes for a touchdown. So they make a move. They go to Talon Alfrey, who hasn't played a game yet this year, but finally got back and healthy. He was the number two guy when Micah Harper went down. Then he became the number one guy, and then he went down. This was his first game back, and you could tell his angles were just off. And so the safety valve has just been a no-show for you in games, and that's led to a lot of big plays. And then offensively, have you guys ever seen – well, I'm sure it's happened in college football, but – 6 total passing yards in the first half of a game.
You may have seen that with Bryson Barnes earlier in the year. That might have happened. Yeah, I'd have to go double check, but he probably had it. Okay, maybe not six. It may have been 20 or something like that. But so maybe not quite. But
well, let me tell you why that's significant. So Iowa State is literally they're like the best team in the country in closing games. When they've got a first half lead, they are only allowing 7 points and I think 140 yards or 147 yards in the second half. They're one of the best closing teams in the country. So they are 19-0 in the last like 2 years or three years, I guess it would be, when they're leading in the first or leading in the first half, going in the second half. You can't come back against these guys. And I knew it. I talked a lot about it in the pregame. In fact, it was one of my three keys to getting this win was BYU has to start early because Iowa State knows how to finish. And they showed that. But BYU start with 6 yards passing and complete dysfunction. And there was one drive that looked really nice for a minute. One drive that looked really nice. Aiden Robbins took it off the edge and Jake Retzloff ended up finding JoJo Phillips for a touchdown pass, and that looked really nice. But outside of that, it just first half was brutal.
What did you think of the play calling, Hans? As far as, I only asked this because I saw one of the weirdest play calls I've ever seen, and it was the jet sweep with a fullback. I don't think I've ever seen a jet sweep with a fullback ever.
Yeah, I didn't like that play call, Lloyd, at all. That was to Ray Paulo. It was third and inches, and it was down in the red zone. And the field was so BYU was slipping all over the place. And I know that there's been a few different people that have been talking about the type of cleats that they were wearing and that played a different role. But I wondered, Lloyd, what exactly he was thinking. I don't know if he thought maybe Ray Paulo would have better footing but you're third in inches and you hand it off to your big H back that's in motion and his legs slip out from under him and it goes to fourth and three or fourth and four. And then they go for it on fourth down and they flip it out to, I think it was flipped out to LJ Martin and he got 2 yards and he was a yard short. It was a turnover and downs like in the 5 or 6 yard line area. Yeah. The footing really got Ray as he was trying to come in around. You know, like, I don't know about you guys. I have the most difficult time challenging play calling because those guys see it in practice and their livelihoods are on it. And so there has to be a method to the madness. Did it look like the right call? No.
All right, so BYU, tough loss. They'll try to regroup. Let's move on to the Aggies really quick as we've been dealing with some technical issues. So let's try to wrap this thing up real quick. But Utah State, hands now at 5-5 on the season as the Aggies now just need to get a win either against Boise State or New Mexico to get bowl eligible. Cooper Laga gets it done, and the defense plays well against an undermanned, I mean, let's be honest, it's not a particularly good team they played yesterday, but still able to get the W, still able to knock off Nevada. And the Aggies, after it looked like they were dead to rights at 3-5, they reel off 2 in a row and now get really closing in. They should get at least that 6th win against New Mexico, but Boise State hasn't been great either this year. I mean, they're okay, but they're not Boise State great. And there's an opportunity, Hans, for Utah State to really right the ship. And when it looked like they were done, Blake Anderson once again brings this team back from the dead.
Picture 8 wins. Get yourself a couple more because that's possible. Get yourself to the bowl game. Get a win. That would be a huge year for Blake to be able to recover like that. But tell me a little bit about the big man touchdown. I want to know how that all went down.
Well, it was so they're running running the screenplay, and it was interesting too because you know Nevada's got a decent drive. They're going down inside the 20 yard line, and they run the screen. But you know you know, as an offensive lineman, you're supposed to get at least a little bit of a stop before you let the guy go. And I believe it was Switzer who got the pressure on the quarterback, just had a free run at the quarterback. He panicked a little bit, threw it right into Senny Tuiaki's hands, and the big man takes it, you know, I think it was like 80-plus yards for the score, and nobody within 20 yards of him the whole way. And I got to imagine, as a big man running for a score, you're looking around and you're thinking, is that goal line here yet? Is it here yet? And it just, but eventually he ended up getting there. But man, I love seeing the big man score, love seeing big man touchdowns. But yeah, he just threw it right in his lap. And when the pressure came and he had to get rid of it quickly, running back wasn't in position. So he dumps it down. And, it, you know, honestly, it's probably the easiest interception anybody's going to have in college football this year. And again, he's able to get trucking into the end zone. And that's a good feeling for the big man. And the game was still relatively close at that point. I think Utah State was up only 10-7 at that point. And that made it 17-7. Then it was off to the races after that. Big day for Rasul Butler. I thought he was just fantastic in that game yesterday. And kind of, which I was really impressed to see what Utah State did in terms of just saying, you know, we've got a guy, and injuries may have had an issue. I know Booth was a little banged up, and Robert Briggs was the other main running back in that game. But they got to a point where they're like, hey, Rasul Butler's got the hot hand. Let's just keep going with him. Because I've always been a little concerned with this three-headed monster Utah State's had at running back and not allowing a guy to really get into a groove, because they've been switching running backs every series. And but in the second half, they thought, all right, Butler's getting it done. Let's just ride that horse and let him go. And he ends up with well over 100 yards rushing. He's just a fantastic running back. I think he's just absolutely, he's got the shiftiness. He's got the power. He can get you third and one, but he can also break off a 30-yarder as well. And just did a tremendous job for Utah State yesterday. And props to Cooper Legat too. Again, not perfect, but for the most part, he just finds ways to win. He finds ways to get things done. He's not turning the ball over. He had an interception on a tip pass at the line of scrimmage, so I don't put that one on him. And he's made good decisions. And I think that message that Blake Anderson's been trying to really install in him, like, don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over, live to play another day, is really sinking in. And he's not going to give that job back. You can tell he's got it. And he's like, look, I'm not letting the freshman take this job over. He's been competitive as hell. So congratulations to him and handling all kinds of adversity. And now Utah State. Look, I think Boise State's beatable next week. I really do. And New Mexico's certainly beatable down in Albuquerque. So there's a lot of opportunities here for Utah State to get to bowl eligibility. And considering how decimated they were in the transfer portal and all the issues they had to deal with, to be able to get back to bowl eligibility, if in fact they can do it, I think that's a huge accomplishment for Utah State.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And just the quarterback situations that Utah State's gone through. Blake, I know, has been under constant, probably pressure put on himself, but under constant pressure to make the right decision with the quarterbacks. And if you were listening to the show last Tuesday, he jumped on and he said, it's Cooper's game. This is Cooper's season. The rest of the way, and it probably felt good to make that decision. And I think that that's going to play well for Cooper, because, you know, that was probably tough for him to lose that start for a little bit, and knowing that he reclaimed it, and now that he can finish the season out strong, he's probably feeling pretty good about life.
Yeah, has to. Absolutely has to. And deservedly so, because he's earned it. He's earned it the hard way, and he was not given anything this year, and yet he still finds a way to get it done. And so props to him and props to Utah State. All right. Let's wrap it up, guys. Utah State gets the W, BYU and Utah with some tough losses yesterday. We'll all break it down coming up tomorrow at high noon. It's your Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, Lloyd Cole. All right, guys, final thoughts. Anything else before we wrap this thing up?
No, not the weekend that obviously BYU and Utah wanted, but still questions in front of them. And like Scotty mentioned, you know, we'll get you caught up all through the week.
All right. Sounds good. It's your Morning After podcast. Hands, Scott and Lloyd. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This has been your Morning After podcast with Hans, Scotty, and Lloyd Cole. Presented by UCCU. Love where you bet. Catch more of the Hans and Scotty Show weekdays from noon to 3. And in podcast form by searching Hans and Scotty on your podcasting platform of choice. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.